From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the blink of an eye, after Citizens United, big money was back before the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday. Big money and politics. In 2010, the Roberts Court threw off long-standing restraints on corporate and union money in politics. Yesterday, the issue was individual contributions and long-standing limits meant to rein in political corruption. This court may well change the limits, drop them in the name of free speech. In our era of the super rich, that could knock down a final floodgate. This hour on Point, the Supreme Court looks again at big money in American politics. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation never ends. Should there be a limit on what American citizens with the deepest pockets can pour into politics? If the court answers no, where are we headed? What about the voice of the little guy, the little gal? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. We will hear in this hour from the Alabama man who has taken this suit all the way to the Supreme Court, who put the McCutcheon in McCutcheon versus Federal Election Commission. But first to the case, the context, and the arguments before the court yesterday, we turn to Robert Barnes, Supreme Court correspondent for The Washington Post. Robert Barnes, Bob, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Tom.
Big money back in a big way yesterday. Have the battle lines changed?
Well, not really. This is a Supreme Court that has a majority that feels some restrictions on campaign finance go too far and that they violate free expression, free political speech. The court is very torn on this, and it has sort of flipped in recent years with Justice Sam Alito taking the place of Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. O'Connor tended to agree with campaign finance restrictions. Justice Alito has tended not to, and that has made a different 5-4 majority than the court has had in the past.
Mr. McCutcheon, who we will hear from and who's bringing this case along with the Republican National Committee, and Mitch McConnell is right in the middle of this as well, head of the GOP in the Senate, is saying, look, I've got money. I want to spend it on campaigns. And why should there be a cap on what I as an individual can give? Put it all together for federal races now. That's the presidency and Congress. And there's a total cap of $3,000.
That's right.
I'm seeing here that if the court takes this aggregate cap off, that could zoom up to $1, $2, $3.5 million. Is it clear? Would there be a limit still? Is it clear what it would be, Bob?
Well, it's not really clear because the court has a lot of different things it could do here. One thing that's probably important to think about, I think most Americans don't know that there really is a total cap on what an individual can give over a 2-year period. In fact, as I've written, most Americans don't know about it, and even fewer could afford to violate it.
Right.
Because it is such a large amount of money on the one hand. But what this does is it says you have to abide by the limits on what you can give an individual, which is about $5,200 for both a primary and a general election.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are also limits on your total spending. And so what Mr. McCutcheon argues is, that would allow him to give the maximum to 9 candidates, but not 10 candidates, or in his case, he wanted to give less than that. But he wanted to spread his money out and spend it on more people, and he couldn't do that.
On congressional races all over the country, but he was cut off from
that.
Now, it may be confusing to people because in the last primary cycle, for example, we heard a lot about Sheldon Adelson spending a lot on Newt Gingrich, way beyond the $5,200 you're describing here. So it's not as though it doesn't happen somehow. Now, how's that work?
Well, we're talking – when we talk about the $5,200, we're talking about direct contributions to a candidate. And what the court has decided and decided 40 years ago in Buckley v. Vallejo is that Congress could put restrictions on the amount of money that a person could give directly to a candidate, because giving too much money directly would raise the appearance or the, in fact, corruption.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, spending on an election, giving to a PAC, for instance, or spending money on behalf of a candidate but not tied to that candidate, that couldn't be restricted because that is a form of political expression that's protected by the First Amendment. So, you know, it's been described as the court came to a fork in the road and they took it.
So you can dump money if you're a rich person into PACs and super PACs.
Can spend your money on behalf or to on an election, but you can't give more than a certain amount directly to a candidate.
Now, the numbers here, I mean, I'm reading that in the 2012 election, there were about 1,200 Americans who hit the current ceiling on their individual contributions, altogether responsible for giving $155 million to the presidential and congressional races, I guess. $155 million. Now, here's a study by Demos saying that if the cap is lifted by the court, and they could, those donors could have contributed three times that amount, which would in total be 50% more than President Obama and Mitt Romney received from all small donors combined. That would put about 1,000 Americans way up in the driver's seat for supporting individual campaigns. Do those numbers make sense to you, Bob?
Well, I guess I should say that those numbers are disputed. I mean, the way that you would get to those numbers is through a sort of interlocking group of political party committees and political parties and candidate committees. It would require an awful lot of work to get to that. And that's what some of the conservative justices pointed out yesterday. Justice Alito called it a wild hypothetical and said that, you know, some of the coordination that would be required there would be either completely unwieldy or illegal. But the other side will point out that whenever there is a loophole in campaign election laws, politicians find a way to exploit it and to get the maximum amount of money into the system that they can. And so it's a little hard to say which side is right about that. But I think there's no doubt that people think that it would certainly allow individuals to give a lot more money.
So who was saying what yesterday? These arguments were made and heard and questioned before the court.
Well, there is a five-justice majority that is very skeptical, as I mentioned, of campaign finance restrictions. Those five were
Scalia, Clarence Thomas.
That's right. Scalia, Thomas, Alito, Anthony Kennedy, and Chief Justice Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been very consistent since Roberts and Alito have been on the court that they have struck down every campaign finance restriction that has come before them. The other side, Justice Ginsburg, Breyer, Kagan, Sotomayor, have all been more protective of these restrictions and think that there is a good reason for Congress to have them. Now, what happened yesterday you saw was the Chief Justice seemed to be sort of looking for a way to sort of divide things up. He said several times that he thought it was wrong to make it that an individual couldn't give the maximum amount of money allowed under law that doesn't give the appearance of corruption to as many candidates as he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
However, he also thought he seemed to give credence to this thought that if you take off the restrictions on giving money to committees and political parties, that it could grow into contributions that reach the millions of dollars. And he did seem concerned about that.
But many others on the court, four others anyway, not apparently concerned. Sean McCutcheon, the plaintiff here, joined by the Republican National Committee. Now, Republicans and Democrats both raise lots of money and lots of money from very wealthy individuals. So why would the Republican Party be in here looking to blow this lid off and the Democrats not?
You know, I think that's a good question. And I think it has to do partly with sort of a tradition that Democrats have always felt that campaign contribution limits were a good idea. Perhaps it did help them. Perhaps it does help them. There are some studies that would show that while both parties have a lot of big donors, that Republicans have more. And so it would help them. But it is a very curious and I think a very decided partisan difference between Democrats and Republicans on this issue.
I mean, the stakes here are being put in very huge terms on supporters of McCutcheon. They're saying this is about free speech. If we don't have free speech, what's it mean to be an American? On the other side, people saying we've already seen the impact of Citizens United. Huge money, huge impact. If this floodgate comes down, you know, Amy bar the door, that's just it is money politics wall to wall.
There was an interesting discussion about that yesterday during oral arguments where Justice Scalia said, well, you know, it's already well established that people can give as much as they want on expenditures. They can give money to PACs. So why does it make any sense to restrict them to giving to political parties? And Solicitor General Don Varelli, representing the government, you know, had to say several times, well, you're the one who created this system, not the government.
And if we go with that premise, he said federal politics would flirt with total domination by fewer than 500 wealthy donors. There's the argument. On the other side, free speech. And if they've got it, let them spend it. They spend a lot already. Robert Barnes covers the Supreme Court for the Washington Post. Bob, please stand by there in Washington. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about the Supreme Court looking at another green light for big money political contributions. Big case before the court argued yesterday, saying that lid on individual contributions have to go. And of course, the government in this case arguing back, no, that these restrictions were put in place in the first place to guard against corruption, that they're still needed to sort of make sure the voice of everyone is heard, not lost under a flood of big money. It was a tough, tough debate with opinions on all sides. At his press conference at the White House yesterday afternoon, President Obama talked about the implications of McCutcheon versus Federal Election Commission. Here's the president on the potential impact.
Well, the latest case would go even further than Citizens United. I mean, essentially, it would say anything goes. There are no rules in terms of how to finance campaigns. There aren't a lot of functioning democracies around the world that work this way.
We will hear in a few minutes from Mr. McCutcheon himself, the Alabama Republican who wants these limits lifted. Now, the tape of yesterday's proceedings, not out yet, but justices have talked about this. Here's some tape of Justice Scalia from July 2012. He was talking with C-SPAN's Brian Lamb. In his view, he said in Citizens United, the decision was made on principle. It was all about freedom of speech.
If you believe that, we ought to go back to monarchy, that the people are such sheep that they just swallow whatever they see on television or read in the newspapers. No, the premise of democracy is that people are intelligent and can discern the true from the false.
Well, I got my clips backward. That's one where he's saying, don't worry about big donors having undue influence in American politics, because the people are intelligent. No matter what's spent, the people can discern truth from falsehood. The premise for that, the principle, here it is, free speech.
The premise is freedom of speech. The more speech, the better. I cannot understand why, and as far as Citizens United, don't forget, Citizens United was not novel. It reversed an opinion 8 years earlier that had changed the law.
Some Americans agree. Some of them are chipping in at just this high level already, 1,200 plus. Many others wondering where we go in a period where wealth is very concentrated, income has grown dramatically at the top and stalled out elsewhere. Where does this take our democracy? Free speech, yes. Democracy and openness and a guard against corruption also sound important. Robert Barnes is with us, covers the Supreme Court for the Washington Post. Sean McCutcheon joins us in a moment, but I want to go first to Richard Briffalt. He's an expert on campaign finance law, professor on constitutional law at Columbia University. Professor Briffalt, thanks very much for being with us.
Pleasure to be here.
In terms of principle first, and we know this gets very quickly out into the real world, or we hope it does, what was the clash of principles that you saw on display yesterday before the court?
Well, you've already talked a little bit about it. One is this the First Amendment idea that the Constitution protects the ability of people to engage in political activity, including through the giving and spending of money. The other is the what's known as the anti-corruption idea, which is we recognize that when people give large sums of money to elected officials, there is a danger that the elected officials will feel obligated to do something for their big donors. That's known as the quid pro quo concern. And related to that is the sense that when the public sees that happening, that has a corrosive effect on the confidence that people have in government and in the willingness of what you referred to earlier as like the little guy and little gal, people without a lot of money, to put their efforts into politics if they think the political process is going to be dominated by a handful of a small number of very, very wealthy people. Justice Breyer at times has said that the First Amendment is on both sides of this, both in terms of the big givers and spenders, because they have rights, mm-hmm. but the concern that the little givers and spenders, the non-givers and spenders who might want to be volunteers, will feel kind of intimidated out of the process.
Or talked right over by bigger money.
Or talked over.
Where do we stand as the court considers this in terms of precedent and settled law, Richard Brifalk?
The case builds on a distinction the Supreme Court drew almost 40 years ago in the Buckley case. It's a famous case in 1976, which is the foundation of the Supreme Court's approach to campaign finance. They drew a distinction there which, seems tissue paper thin, but it's been the law ever since, which is a distinction between how the court will review contribution restrictions, which is money that somebody gives directly to an elected official or gives to a political party, mm-hmm. money that's given to somebody else, and expenditures, money that a person, a candidate or an individual or a PAC spends just on taking out ads and communicating directly with the voters. And the court has said repeatedly that money spent on this direct communication with the voters, that can't be limited. And that was what Justice Scalia was talking about in your tape a second ago, because it's the purest form of speech and it's just not corrupting because the public can decide. But that money that's given to a candidate or given to a party, that's a lower order of speech. It doesn't say as much. It actually communicates, I support you, but it doesn't have words. It doesn't give arguments. So it's a lower form of speech. And it creates a higher level of danger because there is this danger of the quid pro quo, that when you put money directly in somebody's pockets or directly in their bank account, they know about it, they're more likely to be grateful, and they're more likely to respond. So the court has pretty consistently applied a lower standard of review. They've been somewhat more deferential to contribution restrictions and have been very strict in reviewing expenditure restrictions and basically have now struck down all expenditure restrictions. That's what was going on in Citizens United. Mm-hmm. But they have generally, not 100% of the time, but generally upheld contribution restrictions, including a version of the restriction that's in this case. I mean, back in Buckley, the law had what's called an aggregate limit was at issue in Buckley, too. Mm-hmm. So right now, the law limits how much money you can give to any candidate per election. But then, as you said, it also limits the total amount of money you can give to all candidates.
Mr. McCutcheon's complaint. Yeah.
Mr. McCutcheon's complaint, exactly. He wanted to give a large sum of money, not the maximum. He was using
1776. Yeah. 1,776, yeah.
So I forget the exact numbers, but I think he gave to about a dozen or 20 candidates and wanted to give to – he gave to 15 and wanted to give to 12 more. Mm-hmm. And that would have put him over the top because the individual limit is 5,200 per election cycle. We adopted limits some years ago when they're inflation adjusted, which is why you get some funny numbers.
Right. But he wanted to be able to spread it far and wide, farther and wider than is allowed under understanding
right.
law. I mean, we already see a lot of donor influence. There's plenty of reporting on it. You can read, anytime you choose about how big donors get to have a big voice, to get a big hearing on Capitol Hill, maybe the White House too. We've already got the Citizens United decision, which felt like some kind of earthquake and still rumbles. If this goes through too, how will the playing field of American politics compare to 4 years ago before the Citizens United? And if this should also, if the court should decide with Mr. McCutcheon here, where are we compared to where we were 4 or 5 years ago?
So let me give you two answers on that. One turns on exactly what the court says. Because there's a way that Mr. McCutcheon can win narrowly, and there's a way in which the court could knock down the entire structure. Based on the oral argument, it sounded to me like if he does win, he's going to win narrowly. That is to say, he's going to win his case, which is to say that the aggregate limits on the ability to give to lots of candidates might fall, but that the limits on how much you could give to any one candidate would still stand. I think going into the oral argument, there was some concern in the reform community that some arguments would be made and the court might be willing to say that basically all contribution restrictions, including the restrictions on how much you can give to one candidate, would be subject to the same kind of strict review that applies to expenditure limits. There are clearly two members of the court, Scalia and Thomas, have said that's how we ought to go. We ought to have the same review of contribution limits as we have of spending limits. And Kennedy and maybe Alito have hinted at that. Roberts hasn't taken a position, and it sounded like in the oral argument that that's not what's going to happen in this case, although it's I never predict what the court's going to do because they're very unpredictable. Mm. But the tenor of the argument was much more focused on these aggregate limits. If we can keep in place the limits on how much you can give to any one candidate or any one political committee, do we need to have these aggregate limits? So it's possible that the aggregate limits might fall, or at least the aggregate limits on how much you give to candidates. That still leaves in place the idea of contribution limits. But the bigger question, in some ways, that also came up in the oral argument is, with unlimited spending out there, by if Mr. McCutcheon couldn't give more money directly to a candidate, he could spend independently. He could go to a super PAC and give as much as he wants to a super PAC that doesn't give to candidates but that spends independently. And the question increasingly I think we have to face is, if you can't limit spending, what's the logic of limiting contributions? Some people think, the court has said, that contributions, direct contributions to a candidate, are that much more corrupting. That's the court's official position. And yet there is a sense out there that if Sheldon Adelson spends $90 million promoting a specific candidate, isn't that candidate likely to be influenced, predisposed,
maybe grateful a little
for that spending? And so it's a hard line to draw. It's the line the court drew 40 years ago. And we might want to say, you know, let's decide this as a matter of public policy, whether this makes sense. And in some ways, the issue that jumps over all of this is, who should be deciding these questions about how we finance our campaigns? The Supreme Court or the people, through Congress, through their state legislatures, through their ballot initiatives?
Yep.
Many states, voters do this through voter initiative. How much of this is the court's matter for the court? How much of it is a matter that the public should be deciding?
Of course, once a lot of politicians are depending on those big money flows, then it's hard even to put limits on there. But Richard Riffalt, Robert Barnes, please stand by. It sounds, as you describe it, like the Robert Courts is likely to give a green light or a greener light here, though, as you say, no one can predict. Sean McCutcheon brought all this to the fore. Alabama man, has an electrical engineering company there, wanted to spend on lots of candidates, ran into the limits and asked himself why, brought a suit. Now his case is before the United States Supreme Court. He joins us today from the Washington area. Sean McCutcheon, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. You're welcome.
What's the principle that you're looking to stand up for here, Mr. McCutcheon?
Well, it's basic freedom of speech and right to political assembly. And again, this is about donating directly to as many candidates and committees as you choose. I don't think y'all have been talking about, say, a challenger out there who can't self-fund but might be a great manager in politics. The challengers are the ones that have trouble raising money because of these limitations. And a lot of the candidates I donated to did not win. So I don't see how you can call that influence when the candidate didn't even make it out of the primary. I'm talking about supporting more candidates,
yes,
including primaries and runoffs and things like that.
So how many were you wishing that you could, how many candidates, Republican, I guess, were you wishing you could have supported in the last election cycle, Mr. McCutcheon?
Well, the number's constantly changing. I have to look at each campaign and who the candidates are. So certainly more than what I did support.
Do you worry that if we pull these lids off one after another, we end up with this corruption or appearance of corruption that the Supreme Court worried about 40 years ago when they put this in place?
No, I do not worry. This is a case about the aggregate limits, not the base limits. The base limits and the committee rules and the PAC rules, all those things that are in place, take care of the corruption arguments. This is about donating to more candidates and more committees and spending your money however you choose.
What about the health of our democracy, Mr. McCutcheon? You could afford to spend almost $2,000 each on a whole bunch of candidates, and good on you for being engaged and involved in politics. But what about Americans who look at this and say, there's no way I could begin to do that? This will inevitably tilt American politics and policy further toward the interests of people like Sean McCutcheon, who've got a big bag of cash.
Well, this is about free speech. This is about getting your message out into the marketplace of ideas. All Americans are entitled to free speech. So, you know, money does not necessarily guarantee that a candidate will be elected. It just allows them to advertise and get their message out and allow people to get to know them and hear their ideas. This is promoting and improving democracy, not limiting it. This is about changing the world for the better.
But you and I mean, we all know what's happened with wealth and income in this country in recent decades, how it's become more concentrated again after a big part of the 20th century where it wasn't so concentrated. Do you have any worry that that might put too much influence in the hands of that concentrated wealth in the hands of a relatively small number of Americans? I get free speech, but what about the democratic idea that, you know, the health of the country depends on having lots of people's voices all come together to decide the outcome?
Well, again, all Americans are entitled to free speech, and both sides have donors that can, or all sides, there's more than two, have donors that can donate and advertise, and this is about free speech. More speech and more ideas is not going to hurt anything.
And you're not worried, I mean, if you can afford to donate $2 million and I can afford to donate $200 in an election cycle, you're not worried that might not tilt policy toward your view, even though we're both just one citizen?
Again, this is about more candidates and more committees. If say, my ninth race was an Alabama House race, and then I wanted to donate to a 10th Senate race in North Carolina, and I was in both the primary and the it's about donating to more candidates and more committees. This is about aggregate limits, not base limits.
How are you feeling after yesterday's hearing before the high court? Are you optimistic that your position may win out here?
Yes, I found it very interesting. The humor was in the courtroom was inspiring. It exceeded expectations. I heard a lot of great ideas, and I was very impressed with the court and the process.
So you think it may go your way?
Yes, sir.
Sean McCutcheon, his name is on the case of Alabama, wants the freedom to spend his money on politics where and how he likes. Mr. McCutcheon, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Robert Barnes of the Washington Post, did you think that optimism is well-founded on Mr. McCutcheon's part?
I think it is, and as we have been discussing, the court has a lot of options in front of it. I think certainly the most likely, based on what we heard yesterday, was the idea that Mr. McCutcheon would be allowed, others would be allowed to give money within those base limits to as many candidates as he wanted to. You know, and then beyond that, or I think tougher questions, one about the role of how much money can you give to political parties and committees, and then beyond that, whether there should be any kind of restrictions at all. I think that's a much tougher thing to think about whether the court would do or not.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Supreme Court looking at another potential green light for big money political contributions. Citizens United argued in 2009. Courts made the change in 2010, and we saw big changes there. Now it's individual contributions that they're looking at. There have been lids in place for a long time. They're looking at popping some of those right off. Robert Barnes is with us this hour, covers the Supreme Court for the Washington Post. Richard Brefault is here from Columbia University, law professor there of constitutional law. We're going to hear in just a moment from Fred Wertheimer at Democracy 21. He's very worried about a greener light being given here. Let's go to all kinds of response from online here. I mean, Rich says the term campaign finance is just a fancy phrase for bribery. Those who can afford the most own the candidate. Then we've got another listener at the website who says, who has had their votes changed by the free speech enabled by the Citizens United case, doubting that the money's made a difference? What do you think? 800-423-8255. Errol in Madison, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Errol. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. To me, this just, it's amazing how they call it free speech. Anywhere else in the world, if they did this, they'd call it bribery. But here it's called free speech for some reason. These big companies, they own politicians. If they don't do what they want, they go to another politician that does do what they want. Then they win because they have the most money and they could do TV ads, and they destroy the other candidate because they don't have the money to do it. So money, I mean, the person with the most money can do the most TV ads, can smear the other side, and then they have no chance because they're standing up for their principles and doing what the people want, not the big companies that want just for their pocketbook, not for the rest of the good. The government is supposed to be there to serve the people, not the companies, the people with the most money. That's not.
Errol, we've got it. And yet there's Sean McCutcheon pointing right at the First Amendment. We'll look at both perspectives right here. One more from Lincoln, Nebraska. Gillian's calling. Hi, Gillian, you're on the air.
Hi, Jillian, actually.
Jillian, great.
Well, I just think that it's actually an interesting twisted positive for the candidates who don't have the big spenders behind their campaigns, because you get to see these great things like Obama's campaign coming out with these grassroots efforts and talking to more individual people and knowing that they had to get more people with little money on their side since they couldn't get those few people with the big money.
No, by one analysis, Jillian, by one analysis here, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and Republicans, of course, looking to build their grassroots support as well. Democrats have been bigger on that so far. But by one analysis, if the court should give the full green light here, you might have, 1,000 or 1,500 people who could, with their very large individual contributions in aggregate, offset all of those smaller contributions. What about that, Jillian?
Well, that is horribly scary, but at the same time, I'm so excited by all these people getting out and saying we're going to go vote, and I just don't think that the big money can do the same thing. I don't think that seeing the ads and having all that airplay in your neighborhood gets out your vote as much as someone coming to your door and listening to your views and caring about it.
Yeah.
And saying that your $5 means as much.
So it could cut both ways in an interesting, kind of flexible way. Bob Barnes, how about it? If people are aware that this big money is flowing in, is it possible that even at great size, it becomes a kind of net negative for candidates or a party, and the excitement of many grassroots contributions offsets it?
Well, I think that's a little hard to say, but certainly there we have many examples of candidates who whose opponents spent more money than they did winning their elections. And so, money is not everything in politics, but certainly it is a big part of it. The concern I think that some on the court have, and is what the first caller talked about, the perception that their participation in democracy doesn't mean as much because there are these big funders out there who have moved in and sort of taken over politics.
I mean, you definitely got people who look at this and say, we have a full-blown national crisis going on here with the influence of big money, and now the potential opening to even more of that influence. One of those is Fred Wertheimer. He's founder and president of Democracy 21, advocates for transparency in government and campaign finance reform. Joins us now from Washington. Fred Wertheimer, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
You've put out a statement saying this would open the door to the corruption of our democracy. That's pretty big talk. What do you see as the potential threat?
Well, let's look at the history of campaign finance contributions and the Supreme Court. For 40 years, the Supreme Court has said you can limit large campaign contributions because they create opportunities for corruption. Now, apparently, even Mr. McCutcheon accepts the idea that you can limit contributions to a candidate. He's not arguing that he ought to be able to give $2 million to a candidate.
Not yet, anyway.
He's arguing, yes, not in this case, and it doesn't appear that the court has reached that point either. He's arguing that he ought to be able to give as much as $5,200 to every candidate he wants to give to.
Yeah.
But then let's look at the reality of how money is raised today. One of the vehicles for raising money is a so-called joint fundraising committee, where an office holder or party official creates a committee consisting of a whole lot of other committees and goes out and solicits big contributions. Both President Obama and Mitt Romney created these joint fundraising committees, and they went out and asked donors to give the maximum that you could give to parties,
right?
$70,000. Mm-hmm. Now, let's suppose we take off the limit on what Mr. McCutcheon can give to House candidates and Senate candidates, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, that maximum is $48,600, which is a lot of money to most people in America. He says he wants to be able to give to a few more candidates, or as many as he wants, and that's not a problem. But if House Speaker Boehner were to create a joint fundraising committee to help all of his House candidates, which is easy to do, he could go to Mr. McCutcheon, and Mr. McCutcheon could give him a check for $2.4 million. That relationship between a speaker or a Democratic leader, Pelosi, soliciting and Mr. McCutcheon giving $2.4 million creates precisely the kind of opportunities for corruption that the court in the past has said can be limited, and that is what is limited by the overall caps. So you're not just opening the door here to more $5,200 contributions to a few more candidates. You're opening the door to powerful office holders in both parties soliciting multi-million-dollar checks from rich people, wealthy people who can afford it. It appears that Mr. McCutcheon can afford a lot of money.
Yeah.
And creating the opportunities for corruption that $2 million worth of contributions given in response to a House Speaker, a Senate Majority Leader, a President of the United States create. That's the danger here. That's what the law and the Supreme Court has prohibited for 40 years, and that's what's at stake in these overall contributions.
Richard Brefault, you had attorney Bobby Birchfield representing the Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, who's right in the middle of all this. And he said yesterday that, yes, there, if you give a whole lot of money as an individual, you know, there might be gratitude and influence. But he said gratitude, quoting him here, gratitude and influence are not considered to be quid pro quo corruption. Of course they might be grateful, but that's not corruption, Professor Brefault.
Yeah, he's playing off a battle that's been going on in the Supreme Court for years now about what do we mean by corruption. And to what extent is corruption literally the exchange of money for favors in a way that looks a lot like explicit bribery? Or can we find corruption in situations where somebody spends a lot of money to help you and you're likely to be grateful and you're likely to want to do things for them, give them access, special access? And he's playing off a line that Justice Kennedy used in Citizens United. Kennedy first used that in 10 years earlier when the Supreme Court upheld soft money restrictions and Kennedy dissented. And then Kennedy turned around and turned his dissent into a majority opinion in Citizens United to say gratitude and influence are not corruption. Corruption looks a lot more like the direct exchange of money for favors. And so he's sort of playing with the language of the court itself.
Yep, Fred Wertheimer.
If I could just comment on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's correct that Justice Kennedy has said there's nothing wrong with buying influence, which is a rather strange concept in our society. But
maybe strange, but widely applied.
Well, let's just assume that that we're talking about quid pro quo corruption. These limits are about preventing the opportunities for corruption. And I maintain that if I can give the Speaker of the House or the Senate Majority Leader a check for $2.5 million, that creates the opportunity to buy a position from that powerful official. It creates the opportunity for quid pro quo corruption, even under Justice Kennedy's standards. So I I mean, I just don't think it holds up.
Fred, what about Justice? Yeah, what about Justice Scalia? He was responding. There's been an assertion that this would make it possible for individuals to spend $3.5 million in an election cycle, and he said, "Look, $3.5 million that you could give to all sources, saying it's not a heck of a lot of money when you spread it around." What about that assertion by the Supreme Court Justice Scalia, Fred Wertheimer? $3.5 million, no biggie.
Justice Scalia doesn't believe in any limits, and $3.5 million contribution may not be big to him, but I would submit that for almost everyone in America, $3.5 million sounds like a lot of money. And if you look at Supreme Court decisions, if you look at the record in earlier cases where money has been used to purchase results from government officials, $3.5 million can buy you a result. It is the kind of money that can create a return from an official, that can bribe an official, that can buy a result. And basically, Justice Scalia was messing around when he made that comment.
Yeah.
To him, $3.5 million is not a lot of money. He's one of the few people in America who believes $3.5 million is not a lot of money, even in this system we have where billions are spent.
I mean, I've seen plenty of reporting on contributions much smaller than that that seem to turn policy in Washington. But let me go to John in Oklahoma City. John, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I think that the argument that Mr. McCutcheon makes that his ability to express his opinion through contributions, he called it free speech, but that's only half the argument. It should be free and equal speech for everyone. Our society guarantees that everyone has an equal voice in the political process, and it's called a vote. One man, one vote, or one citizen, one vote. And when a wealthy individual has the kind of resources that Mr. McCutcheon and others have, it has the effect of it's no longer an equal playing field. It's like having a debate where one side has a megaphone and the other side has to rely on the power of his individual voice.
John, I hear that loud and clear, but I don't know if the Constitution really guarantees all that. I mean, they guarantee that one man, one person, one vote, certainly. But Richard Berfault, is there any guarantee that the size of the voice within that system will be the votes will all be votes if it's played fair? But what about the voice issue in the Constitution?
Yeah, that's a hard one. I mean, I think what the Constitution says is people can't be stopped from speaking. The real question is to what extent or should we try and create a setting in which opportunities for voice are more equal? It's not clear. In some ways, if we're really talking about equalizing people's voices, contribution limits and spending limits alone won't do it. Forms of subsidies, public support for voters, matching fund systems, you really need something that looks more like that. Frankly, even if the existing law is upheld, Mr. McCutcheon can still put $123,000 legally into the next election cycle.
Yeah, Bob, we've got plenty of people online saying, Bob, plutocracy is where we're headed here. There's a sense of crisis. Mitch McConnell himself, he has argued that all contribution limits should be eliminated, all of them. Do you see, Bob Barnes, the sort of, a step here toward just this as a way station toward maybe all limits being dropped?
A step, perhaps. You certainly didn't see much interest yesterday in the court to address those issues that Senator McConnell brought up through his attorney. But the idea of equalizing the playing field is something that the Supreme Court has said simply does not go. It does not move this court. In fact, attempts by government to do that, they have found to be unconstitutional. So while that sounds like something that might be sort of good public policy, the court has been quite clear on that.
But we're so far from that now. Fred Wertheimer, we had the Solicitor General saying yesterday, warning that if the court isn't careful, federal politics would flirt with total domination by fewer than 500 wealthy donors. Is that hyperbole, Fred, or is that a real danger in the where we stand?
Well, there's no question there's a real danger here. History and reality tell us that if you allow office holders to solicit and donors to give $1 million or $2 million or $3.5 million to directly support federal candidates and parties, that you are on a path to legalize corruption. And we will have that. We had it in the Watergate era. We had it in the soft money scandals of the 1990s when the parties could raise unlimited amounts of money and use them in federal elections. And we will head directly in that direction if you open the door to a handful of really wealthy people being able to buy government decisions. This case is about a minute number of the 300 million Americans in this country.
Fred Wertheimer, we're out of time right there. Democracy 21, Richard Berfault, Columbia, Robert Barnes, Washington Post. Thank you to you all. This is On Point.